What's up, everybody? Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Michael Fabiano alongside the Fantasy Viper, Graham Barfield. And today is going to be just bananas.
Yeah.
Because we're taping this podcast while the interviews are going on with coaches and general managers at the Combine. And so news is just going to be just pouring in. So we will do our best to try and get all of it to you with the fantasy analysis, of course. We've also got our pal Edward Murphy behind the glass is going to be keeping tabs on things as well. What's up, Murph?
Going to be back. Took a couple days vacation down in Florida. So
how was it? Nice?
It was good. You would love this. Well, I'm not sure love because you're wearing the Yankees hat, but I was eating dinner next to Pedro Martinez.
You should have asked him to call you daddy.
My dad brought up, he's like, hey, you know, big fan of yours. Like, you know, you're one of the best all time. He's like, I'm a diehard Yankees fan. He's like, the Yankees are my favorite team growing up. I asked to be traded to the Yankees three separate times and it was blocked.
Is that right?
That's what he told us.
Wow.
He was really open, loved getting in depth on the Houston Astros stuff. Talked about the buzzer, talked about the why cameras are so helpful, and talked about the rotation of the ball and how you could slow it down and these hitters. Like, it was just insane. He was like the coolest guy. So
that's cool, man.
That was a treat. Yeah. So
it's always cool. Like, cause I mean, growing up, like there's teams and players that you just don't like.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, Pedro Martinez was certainly one of them.
It's interesting that he wanted to be a Yankee. I did not know that.
I mean, let's be honest, though. Who doesn't want to be a Yankee?
I kind of agree with that. I'm not sure how much he was put on a show, but he said he asked for a trade three separate times and it was blocked. But you know what? You know, even though he's a Red Sox and he played on a few other teams, you can't deny his greatness. He had some of the best pitching seasons of all time.
Oh yeah.
Eddie, did he say the Astros' punishment was not enough? Did he go in depth on there?
He didn't say like whether he wanted. He was very. As a pitcher, he was like, you could tell he was bothered by it because of the cameras and the different angles they had. And his whole thing was these batters know how many rotations are coming if it's a fastball versus a breaking ball. And he was saying how the angles and they could slow it down really helps them. So you could tell from his point of view, he was very against, obviously, what they did. And I wouldn't be shocked if he thought it should be a longer punishment. But he said that he didn't think they used buzzers because he's like, you know, when a fastball's coming, he's like, even 92 miles per hour, he's like, if you blink, that ball's by. There's no way that someone could buzz you and you could feel it before that ball comes. He goes, let alone 98 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Just hearing a guy, like an all-time great, a legend, talking about that kind of stuff was pretty unreal.
Hmm. Yep. And baseball season is here.
Garrett, it is Bolden, back, yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
As a Yankee. All right, guys, we got a lot of news to get to. Let's do it. So the first thing I want to talk about is the CBA, because we haven't really had a chance to talk about it. That news sort of broke after our last podcast. So we're still waiting to hear what happens. There was a players vote that was supposed to have happened last week, and that now is delayed until this week. I believe that the NFL and the NFLPA are meeting in Indianapolis maybe today.
They're going to get it done.
And if this happens, we'd have more fantasy football, Graham.
We do. Hopefully another bye week in there, too, so these guys aren't absolutely killing themselves out there on the field. But, yeah, more games, more football.
So it's going to be odd for me to say that, week 17, fantasy, you're not crazy anymore for playing at that point, right? Because it looks like what's going to happen is that maybe they're going to go, 19 weeks?
Which means
that you'd be playing fantasy football until week 18.
Right. So if they add one more game, in theory, they'd have to add an extra bye week.
Right.
And then they would kick out a preseason game.
Yes.
In theory. And then we're going to get more playoff football, too. The playoffs.
I don't know if I love that, but whatever.
I'm with you on that.
They're going to do it.
What football, more regular season football will be interesting.
Yes.
I think it's going to change. Obviously, it'll change the way we play fantasy, the way we approach it. But really, in the same vein, it doesn't. I mean, it just makes the season a little bit longer.
Right, exactly. So more fantasy football is never a bad thing. Let's put it that way. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully, they come to an agreement sooner rather than later, especially as people who work for the NFL. We don't want to deal with any sort of work stoppage.
I will say,
as fans as well.
Do you think, so with this new season proposal, I guess the season would start in late August and end maybe the week after Christmas. So we would be going until New Year's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So, And then, of course, then there's the talk of like the President's Day weekend Super Bowl,
right?
Which would be, I mean, that would be perfect,
right?
Right. I mean, that would be amazing.
Yeah, because everybody gets that Monday off.
Exactly.
For this part.
I mean, the Super Bowl's a, I mean, heck, it's a holiday right now at
there
this
was,
point.
There was some kid, I can't remember. I saw a tweet, but some kid was trying to basically make the Monday after the Super Bowl a national holiday. And hey, he actually might get his wish.
Gonna get it now, man. Yeah.
If they push it back to President's Day.
So that's exciting news. And we'll find out, hopefully, again, sooner rather than later. About what the decision is by the players. I think the players who aren't making like the big dollars probably like it. The guys, you know, like JJ Watt's already said, he doesn't like it. Basically, because I believe in that last game, basically the players will be making $250,000 regardless of what they make per game prior to that week. And I could see why, you know, some of the big guys who are making
the
large cash are like, wait a minute.
Fabs, we are going to see a flurry of agents trying to basically renegotiate deals.
No kidding.
Yeah, not everybody's going to be on that plan.
Right. But regardless, it looks like we're getting more football and more fantasy football. Moving on, our pal Ian Rappaport is reporting that the Panthers are moving forward with Cam Newton as their team's starting quarterback. So Cam, who, if you looked at his numbers over the last couple of seasons, not great. He hasn't been the Cam Newton, the Superman that we all have come to know and love. Now he apparently is going to remain in Carolina. So what does that mean from a fantasy perspective? Now, if Cam is no longer going to be drafted as a QB1 in fantasy unless you're in a 12-team league. And I think he's probably going to end up being a late-round pick now, right? If Cam is back with the Panthers, as he is, reports, how does that make you feel? Because I feel like we both agree on Cam Newton that he's going to be a late-round pick as a borderline QB1, QB2. How does that make you feel about Christian McCaffrey? Because if Cam Newton is, in fact, 100%, there's a possibility that Cam Newton takes away some of those goal line opportunities that McCaffrey got in an abundance last season.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, Cam is coming off now his second major injury in back-to-back years. Had the shoulder injury in 2018, obviously didn't play all of last year. And apparently there was a report this morning, too, that Cam is still like maybe 2 to 3 months away from being full strength. So you know, the Panthers can say that they're backing their guy. It's finally good to hear them, you know, say something about Cam, because pretty much for the last 2 months, Fabs, we've been waiting for them to say anything about Cam and where they're at with him. So it was nice to see them say they're moving forward with him, but I still think they're very interested in this draft class and as they should be. I mean, the Panthers are kind of in this evaluation mode. That said, if Cam is back under center with the Panthers, I will have a ton of him in the late rounds this coming season, just because all their weapons are so good. Sure, he'll take a couple goal line carries away from Christian McCaffrey. But at the same time, I mean, this will be Cam in his age, 31 season? He's going to be a different player now, especially after going through two major injuries. I think he'll probably, he won't change the way he plays. I mean, he's always going to be Cam. He's always going to try to, you know, run the ball a bit. But at the same time, I do think the next time we see Cam Newton on a football field, he might change just a little bit in terms of how he's taking hits and where he's being used on the field as a runner.
Going to be interesting to see, too, what the Panthers do in the draft, because they have been tied to, you know, Jordan Love, Justin Herbert. So we shall see. That's going to be very interesting. But I think we agree on Cam. Christian McCaffrey's still going to end up being the first pick in every draft across the board. It's going to be him and Saquon Barkley. Moving on, there's a report out there from Nate Ulrich on Twitter that the Browns will tender Kareem Hunt as a restricted free agent. GM Andrew Berry declined to reveal what level of tender that will be at. I don't like this. I don't want Kareem Hunt on the Browns. I don't. Selfishly.
You just want Nick Chubb.
That's all I want. Can I have Nick Chubb as a featured back, please? The guy is awesome, okay? And I get it, you know, the Browns don't care about our fantasy football teams, but, I mean, geez Louise, let him sign with the Bucks or someplace where he could be a featured back. Kareem Hunt would be a first-round pick in fantasy. Nick Chubb would be a first-round pick in fantasy if these guys are separated. You put them together, like, Nick Chubb was still good, but, I mean, he had 2 touchdowns when Hunt came back last season. He had 6 before he was there. I don't like it. The Browns are smart to do this because Kareem Hunt is a ridiculously talented player who's been a knucklehead off the field. We all know that. But if he stays in that backfield in Cleveland, Nick Chubb, to me, might end up dropping out of the first round in a 10-team league and be more of a second-round pick. The guys, Nick Chubb is amazing. I love the guy, but Kareem Hunt is damn good. And if you think that's not going to be a committee situation there where Chubb is sort of, you know, one and Hunt is 1A, you're crazy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. To end the year, both once Hunt became active for the Browns in their final eight games, it was basically Chubb and Hunt were back-end RB1s. I think they both finished as like the RB11 and RB12 in that span. So they can both produce and get it done, but you're right. It definitely hurt Nick Chubb's ceiling for sure. And if Kareem Hunt, it does look like Kareem Hunt's going to be back. Certainly going to hurt Chubb's ceiling once again, especially as a pass catcher, because Chubb was getting used not a ton as a pass catcher in the first 8 weeks of the season, but enough, you know, 3-4 targets a game, and then Hunt came in and basically took all of the passing down work.
I think a lot will be determined on what level that tender is, because, you know, that could scare some teams away. Because do you want to give up a second or third round pick for a guy who's got all the talent in the world but comes with a ton of baggage?
Probably not.
So we may not get our hope that Kareem Hunt is out of Cleveland. We'll see what happens there. Joe Burrow, the likely number one overall pick of the Cincinnati Bengals, says that, quote, "I'll play for whoever drafts me," end quote.
Good.
So forget about Eli Manning and John Elway comparisons. Not going to happen. Burrow's going to go to Cincinnati. That's good for Bengals fans. From a fantasy perspective, I mean, I said this on TV yesterday. I don't know that A.J. Green will be back, and there's a report out there that he wants to be out of Cincinnati. We'll see if that comes to fruition. But, I mean, you've got Tyler Boyd there. Auden Tate started to show some stuff last season. You've got a guy in Joe Mixon who hasn't even hit his prime, and he's already a very talented featured back. They're going to get some help in the offensive line back. So, I mean, maybe it's not the best landing spot from a fantasy perspective, but in this case, you have to look at reality, and the reality is that Joe Burrow's not getting past the Bengals.
Yeah, Bengals need to go all in on offensive line.
Yes.
Once they draft Joe Burrow, try to find any other way to get Burrow a little protection, because the Bengals' offensive line last season was one of the three or four worst units in the NFL. But that being said, I mean, Burrow can create outside of structure and you know, do a bunch of things that Andy Dalton cannot do with his legs. So I think that will help the offense a little bit more, just Joe Burrow's, you know, maneuverability. But I'd love to get AJ Green one good year with a great quarterback, and I think Joe Burrow has the potential to be a great quarterback, and it would be great to see Green with the Bengals, but I'm with you. It definitely sounds like both of those sides have sort of parted ways, and maybe for good reason. I mean, I think AJ Green kind of stuck it out for a really long time there, and we'll see.
And also keep in mind, you're going to get Jonah Williams back,
yep,
right? So that's going to help. And then whatever they can add through free agency or the draft is going to help improve that offensive line. And I really think the Bengals need to focus on that, because they are going to want to protect this kid. Because if you get him time in the pocket, let him do his thing, you know, the Bengals, the future could look very bright for a franchise that hasn't really had a whole lot of success in the National Football League, at least since the 80s, the days of Ken Anderson, and then a little bit during Boomer Esiason there, and then Carson Palmer, who Bengals fans probably want to forget about at this point. Moving on, Ben Roethlisberger, who's coming back from the elbow injury, estimates that he's still 2 to 3 months from full clearance, but it looks like he is going to be back in time for training camp, which means Big Ben back under center for the Steelers in 2020. How does that going to affect this offense?
Yeah, not surprised. I think we all kind of expected Big Ben to come back, especially after basically only playing 1.5 games this past year. Juju Smith-Schuster, Fabs.
Yeah.
How much are we buying the bounce back
with Big Ben? I mean, dude, he can't be any worse than he was last season. That's for sure.
No doubt.
There's no doubt about that. And I really end up thinking that he'll be a top 40 pick still.
Yeah.
He'll be a top 40 pick because we know the talent. We know what he did before Roethlisberger went down, although people argue, well, he had Antonio Brown. Okay, that's fair. But he's still a talented guy, and an offense that's going to throw the football with Roethlisberger under center. So I still say he's not a wide receiver one.
Right.
He's going to be drafted as a wide receiver two. Going to be interesting to see what else they do there on the offensive side. You know, the return of Big Ben means James Washington, Deontay Johnson are going to end up being listed as sleepers across the board in the fantasy industry. And then, of course, that running back situation. I don't know what's going to happen there. I'm guessing James Conner will continue to be the guy.
Sure.
But he has shown that he cannot stay healthy, which means we could end up seeing more of a committee. But Big Ben, I have Big Ben ranked ahead of Aaron Rodgers right now.
Yeah.
I mean, like, It sounds crazy because, you know, he didn't play last season.
I don't
but
think that's crazy at all.
Big Ben's, he's going to chuck it, man.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, the Steelers are going to throw it, and if Big Ben's healthy, he's been, you know, top 10 quarterback. Aaron Rodgers has kind of been just on the back end of the top 10.
Yep.
I could see it.
Yep. Colts owner Jim Irsay, who follows me on Twitter, probably the only NFL owner who follows me on Twitter, says all options are on the table at the quarterback position for the Colts. And to me, and I've said this, you know, Phillip Rivers is such a good fit there. He really is. Like, you know, and the Colts have also been sort of connected to some of these rookie quarterbacks. You bring Rivers in there for a year, maybe two. He becomes the bridge to a guy who could potentially be the face of your franchise. But Rivers in Indianapolis just makes too much sense not to happen. And I agree with you. The only other place that I feel like could push for him maybe harder than the Colts is Tampa Bay. But we'll see what happens, man. They're Ursay clearly showing us here that Jacoby Brissett is not the answer.
Sure. You know, I think Brissett played really well to start the year. Then they kind of tapered off a little bit on offense.
Big time.
I think once some teams figured out their passing offense and kind of figured out really that they didn't have a lot of great receivers. They dealt with a bunch of injuries this past year. T.Y. Hilton was obviously banged up for the majority of the year. They lost Paris Campbell really early. They lost Devin Funchess really early. So I think Brissett kind of got a little bit unlucky. They also lost Eric Ebron. And I know Ebron's a free agent now. But
yeah,
you know, their offense kind of crumbled last year. And I would like to see Brissett get one more shot. But Phillip Rivers is, yeah, he's a perfect fit back there. And, you know, veteran quarterback who can command the huddle, command at the line of scrimmage behind that offensive line.
Yeah.
I need to see it. And not for nothing, too. It just came out that Anthony Costanzo, their Colts left tackle, will continue to play. He was thinking about retiring, and now he's back, and that is huge.
Yeah, Pro Football Focus ranked that offensive line 11th in terms of pass protection. The Chargers, 31st.
Wow, 11th is really – I would have – was that on their grades or just
– Yeah, the offensive line grades, pass protection. Yep. So, I mean, still pretty good. Still pretty good and much an improvement over what he had in Los Angeles, that's for sure. So, Phillip Rivers – could be a Colt. We'll see what happens. Moving on, Thomas Dimitroff, Atlanta's GM, saying that the Falcons are going to let Austin Hooper test free agency. I mean, I don't know if I like this or not, because people forget. Before Hooper went down last year with the injury, he was the number one tight end in fantasy football. Okay, it wasn't Travis Kelce. It wasn't George Kittle. It wasn't Zach Ertz. It was Austin freaking Hooper. And if you believe that the Chargers are going to tag Hunter Henry, which I believe they will, Hooper is going to be far and away the best free agent tight end on the market. And there are teams out there that could use him. Washington Redskins, maybe?
Let's go. Let's have the best of both worlds here. Austin Hooper becomes a Patriot.
I mean, that's possible too.
80 balls. And Calvin Ridley also breaks out because Austin Hooper's not taking, you know, 6-7 targets.
Exactly. And that's a great point, because when Hooper went down, Ridley was a monster. In our show championship, I lost to Colleen Wolf, and not having Ridley killed me.
I am going to draft so much Calvin Ridley this coming year.
Boy, these Alabama wide receivers, huh?
So sick.
I mean, yeah.
So sick. We're going to talk about a bunch of them here in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. So Austin Hooper, I don't know if he's unlikely to return to Atlanta, but Atlanta, they are clearly not going to dish out the dough to keep him around.
He wants to get paid, man. I was looking at I was looking at the numbers of what he's asking for. He's asking for a huge deal. And not to say he doesn't deserve it. It's just I think Atlanta's doing the wise thing to try to see if see what the market's like for him. You know, Hooper's only — this is kind of crazy. Hooper's only 25 years old.
Young guy.
It feels like he's been around for like 6 or 7 years.
I think it's because fantasy owners have been waiting for him
to be what
he was this past season for a while. We already talked about AJ Green and the report that he wants out of Cincinnati. We'll see what happens there. I mean, I would guess it's a 50-50 shot right now, right? I mean, the Bengals want him back. Whether or not he wants to remain there and not win, or go someplace else like New England and win games, we'll see what happens. But A.J. Green is 31, 32 years old at this point. So I'd like to see him go someplace else. New England would be the place that I would love him to end up in, with Tom Brady, who apparently wants New England to commit a couple of years to him in a potential contract. We'll see what happens there. I still can't see Tom Brady going anywhere else. A couple of just real quick injury notes. Jarvis Landry is going to be out a while after hip surgery on February 4th, but he should be good to go once we get to training camp. And then Hollywood Brown had foot surgery to remove a screw that was giving him problems all season long. Per Ian Rappaport, he'll be fine for training camp. So Hollywood Brown, maybe in his second NFL season, sort of builds off of what he did as a rookie. Had some great moments, was very inconsistent, but he should be fine once we get into July and training camps, which, I mean, look at this point, It's almost March.
Yeah, it's going to fly by.
It's almost March. So, yeah, things are going to fly by. So we're not going to be missing football. Those of us – have you watched any XFL at all?
I have, yeah.
I watched a little bit. It's all right. My fantasy team is garbage, Christian Michael. Why did I draft that idiot? What a dumb
idiot. You didn't get bit by the Christian Michael steam enough when he was in NFL?
No, I mean, like, you know, he had that little run in the NFL, and people were all over, and I'm like, you know, he's – whatever. And then I said, well, I mean, it's the XFL. The talent's not as good. And he still sucks. All right. And that's the news.
That was the news.
All right. So last week, Graham and I started breaking down some of the guys that you need to know for the combine, which is going on in Indianapolis right now. A lot of interviews and a lot of fun stuff you're going to see on social media from coaches and from GMs. But they're there because they want to evaluate talent, which is going to be a lot of fun for us to watch and see what some of these kids can do. So last week, we started off with, you know, a lot of the big name guys. You know, we talked about Burrow. We talked about Tua. We talked about Swift and There's just a ton of talent at the wide receiver position. So we started off a little bit there with Judy and with CeeDee Lamb. So we're going to break down a few more guys at a couple of the positions here that you're going to want to keep tabs on. And the first one I have is Justin Herbert. And every time I see a last name Herbert, it makes me think of A-Bear in Seinfeld. But Justin Herbert last year, 14 games, completed about 67% of his passes, 32 touchdowns, 6 picks. And this guy's huge.
Yeah.
He's 6'6". He's 237. He's got really good arm strength. He's actually a mobile quarterback, too, for 6'6", right? I mean, he had 4 rushing touchdowns last season, and in 43 games at Oregon, he had 13 rushing touchdowns. He also had the most drops of any quarterback on throws of 20-plus yards in college football, Pro Football Focus. So the guy has got a lot of potential, both in reality and as a fantasy player.
He does. I saw him at the podium this morning. He's got great hair, too.
I know.
Super tall, great
hair. I'm
tired
of all you guys around me with great hair.
Man.
This guy's got great hair. Handsome. Eddie, you wear a hat all the time, but I know you got great hair under there.
He's a handsome dude. I did not know Justin Herbert was that handsome. But anyway, yeah. I haven't watched a bunch of Justin Herbert, but I did see quite a bit of Oregon's games. I haven't, like, studied him in depth, but I did watch a lot of Oregon in college football. And, Herbert's got some things he's got to plan out. I think he was, fairly erratic as a passer. And I think some teams, you know, probably in that top 10, top 15 range, like the Chargers especially, are doing their due diligence and really looking into him. I think there's a clear top two in this class between Burrow and Tua. And I think the distance between those two and Herbert is pretty far. But that's not to say that Herbert won't get drafted highly. I think we've seen in the last couple of years guys like Daniel Jones who rocket up draft boards in as we go through this process. And I think Herbert will be the clear guy this year, where maybe, you know, we expected him to not necessarily be an early first round pick in January, but I think as we get through this process and teams keep evaluating him, I think Herbert's draft stock is just going to continue to rise, and he'll most likely be a top 15 pick.
One of the teams that some people speculate would want a quarterback are the Detroit Lions, but a report just comes out that the Lions insist Matthew Stafford is not getting traded. General manager Bob Quinn said the Lions anticipate Stafford being full go in the offseason workouts after he missed 8 games last year due to a back injury. And Stafford was freaking good.
That makes no sense to me.
He was good. It's not like he's an old man. I mean, he played well last year before he got hurt.
I have no idea who started the Lions and Stafford rumor, because Stafford was amazing to start last year. Like,
he was great.
And he's been great. He's been great and consistent for basically the entirety of his career. He's only had a couple down years.
Yeah, two seasons ago, he wasn't all that great, but he started off tremendous, and he wasn't even drafted in a lot of leagues. So it looks like he'll stick in Detroit, and that's sort of what we all expected. Moving on, Jordan Love out of Utah State. This past season, played in 13 games, 62% completion percentage, 20 touchdowns and 17 picks. The previous year in 2018, he had 32 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. So he wasn't as good in terms of his accuracy this past season. He's also got good size at 6'4", 225, good arm strength. But with those 17 interceptions, you've got to you've got to think that maybe this is a guy who needs to improve on his decision-making. He's not really a running quarterback. If you look at him on tape, he can elude defenders. He can scramble around and extend plays, which you like. And Daniel Jeremiah, our pal here at NFL Network and the number one draft analyst here, quote, Love is a raw prospect who will need some time to develop. There is risk with him, but the payoff could be huge.
Yeah, I like Jalen Hurts a little bit more than Jordan Love. I think Hurts, coming up when he transferred out of Alabama, I was kind of, you know, obviously interested to see what he would do in Oklahoma in that offense, and he did not disappoint. Really opened it up. I kind of like Hurts as the sleeper quarterback of this class. It'll be really interesting to see how his draft stock is evaluated, where he goes, because look, we just talked about with Herbert, his draft stock has been moving up. I think Hurts could be another guy because he. You know, the NFL is now centered around these dual threat guys that can move, and Hurts can certainly move, certainly more than Jordan Love.
There's always like that one quarterback that going into the combine people are talking about, and then he just keeps moving up and up and up and up. And I remember a couple of years ago where like Josh Allen was like in the conversation to be the number one overall pick. Like, I mean, he's been very good for the Buffalo Bills so far, and from a fantasy perspective, he's been very good as well.
I mean,
so
I know Joe Burrow obviously had just this phenomenal season, accounted for over 60 touchdowns, et cetera, is definitely the number one overall pick. But Hurts' season was tremendous too. I mean, he ran for over 1,200 yards, had 20 rushing touchdowns in his three full seasons as a starter, dating back to 2016 and 2017 in Bama. He ran for over 800 yards in every season. I like Jalen Hurts a little bit as a sleeper. And, I think this kind of speaks to something else that maybe we could talk about more in the offseason, Fabs. But, running quarterbacks and the value that they provide seems undervalued almost in the NFL. It's almost like we're transitioning out of this period where the NFL is kind of centering its decision-making on pocket passers and more towards guys that can move and have the ability to move. And there are certainly quite a few of those guys in this class.
So I'm doing an article. I'm always desperately trying to figure out how to tie fantasy football to the combine a little bit more, because honestly, and we said it last week, these guys can go out and just be great in the combine, or they can go out and suck. And if they end up in a great spot in the NFL, sometimes it doesn't even matter. Right. Tom Brady, everyone jokes around about, what he looked like at the combine and how he was, slow and looked like a high school kid out there. And then he ends up being the greatest quarterback ever. Like, there's been players who have really flourished at the combine and haven't done well. And then, vice versa. There's been guys who haven't been great at the combine who have gone on to flourish in the National Football League. But I talked about this a little bit last week, where Gilbrandt has his 9 targets for certain categories and certain drills that these kids are going to be doing. And I'm doing an article on this. It'll be out this week. But to your point about the running quarterbacks, we have seen since 2010, and that's where the research is going to begin. Since 2010, there's not a whole lot of quarterbacks who have finished, in the top 10 in their first years. But we have seen some guys finish in the top 20. Cam Newton basically nailed every single one of Gil's marks. Robert Griffin III, same thing. Dak Prescott, same thing. Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, same thing. What do all those guys have in common? They're versatile, man. They're mobile. Move. They could run with the football. Yeah. So, to Graham's point, that is something that I feel like NFL teams now, with Lamar Jackson coming out and having the monster season that he's had, with Josh Allen sort of emerging as well, with these running quarterbacks having success in the league, you're going to see some teams really go after these guys who are going to be able to make plays not only with their arms, but with their legs. Speaking of players who can make plays with their leg, let's move on to a couple of running backs here. And we'll talk with Jonathan Taylor, who you really like. Oh, yes. I know that you love this kid out of Wisconsin. 14 games this past season, 2,003 yards, averaged over 6 yards a carry, had 21 touchdowns, also caught 26 balls out of the backfield, had 5 touchdowns. He rushed for 2,000-plus yards in back-to-back years.
Almost had 3 straight.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. His career at Wisconsin in 41 games, over 6,100 rushing yards, averaged almost 7 yards a carry, 42 rushing touchdowns, 42 catches, and 5 scores. The guy is strong. He's got good speed. He's effective on screens. He's a guy who could be a home run hitter. And I don't want to hear about Ron Dane or Monte Ball. This guy is good.
Yeah. I think, you know, going into this process, this class is really good. I mean, there's five or six. I think there's a clear top five or six, and then some like two to three really nice sleepers. And as I've gone through it, I think Taylor's kind of separated as the clear number one running back in this class. Obviously, it'll be really interesting to see how these guys run, how these guys test in a few days here at the combine. But the biggest thing for Taylor coming into this year is, you know, could he prove that he's a decent enough receiver? Only caught 16 balls in like 30 games, something like that. Going into this year, and you just mentioned, caught 26 balls
yep.
this past year on top of 320 carries. I mean, Taylor has been carrying the load for Wisconsin for now three straight years.
Does that affect him?
You know, I don't really have a good answer for it, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think you could point to a few guys that maybe wore down really quickly that had huge college workloads. But then you could also point to somebody like Derrick Henry, who had just monster workloads in high school, monster workloads in college. Obviously started his NFL career a little bit slowly in terms of workload, but has really shown no signs of degrading. I think there was always that argument, Fabs, where people would say, you know, Alabama players are overworked coming into the NFL, and that's why they haven't really translated. And I think that's also been bucked. I mean, there's so many great Alabama yeah. players. So I think you can go both ways with it. Maybe, you know, there's some one-off cases of guys that, you know, are dealing with injuries that, you know, pop up again in the NFL for sure. But look, I think Jonathan Taylor's the clear number one running back in a very good class.
Mm-hmm. Wisconsin, I mean, Melvin Gordon came out of there. They haven't had a lot of success at the running back position. I mean, Michael Bennett, I believe, was a mm-hmm. Wisconsin running back as well. But that stuff is all fun to look at. Like, if let's go back to Justin Herbert. Every Oregon quarterback that's come out since Dan Fouts has been garbage. Garbage. Name me one that's been good. Chris Miller, Akili Smith was a bust. A.J. Feely. Joey Harrington was a bust. Kellen Clemens, Dennis Dixon, Mariota.
You're not waiting for the Marcus Mariota? This Marcus Mariota train to turn around?
I think he is what he is.
hey, I agree.
Moving on. This guy, I'm going to root for this guy because he's 5'8". And I'm 5'8". I'm short. You guys know that if you watch me standing next to Akbar, which is not fair, by the way. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, this guy, I mean, that game that he had against Alabama was sick. Like, that was the game where everyone was like, holy beep, this guy is freaking good. 20 carries, 103 yards, averaged over 5 yards per carry, had three touchdowns on the ground. Not only that, he caught 9 balls for 77 yards and had a touchdown. My guy Darius Geis, who's also an LSU alum, loves him. Loves him. He's 5'8", but he's 209, so he's a little bowling ball, right? I mean, you talk about, like, Maurice Jones-Drew. He is so good in the passing game. So good. He is a great pass catcher. I don't know that he could be a three-down back in the NFL yet. And I think part of that is because the guy was lined up on routes because he's such a good pass catcher, so he didn't pass protect a lot
right.
In college. Daniel Jeremiah, he says that he's very similar to an Austin Ekeler. Hmm. That's got to get your ears pop because Austin Ekeler's damn good. He's a playmaker. So, I mean, if this kid ends up in the right team, he could make an impact.
Man, yeah, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, man, he is a true freak.
I want a dude named Clyde on my team. I just
great
do.
Last name too. Great, fantastic. The biggest thing that I took away watching him is his contact balance is unbelievable. I mean, he gets hit and just it doesn't matter. He's like a weeble wobble. It just doesn't matter. He just pops back up. Fantastic contact balance. I'll be interested to see how he tests in the 40. I don't think he's a burner by any stretch. You don't have to be a burner mm-hmm. to be an effective NFL back. But it'll be interesting to see if he runs in like the 4.5, 4.6 range. That'll be a good speed for him. Anything faster would be a shock. But, you know, if he's in 4.5, 4.6 range, he'll be great. The only knock I have against him, and I actually think he can be a three-down back because he's such a great pass catcher. Mm-hmm. Those great pass catchers just aren't being able to pass protect because they're such great pass protectors.
Right. They don't have the opportunity to do that.
Right. They're always running routes.
Right.
My only knock against him is that he basically has just 1 year of a sample size. His freshman year basically didn't play.
Yeah, some good players ahead of him.
Yeah, obviously some really good players ahead of him. Sophomore season kind of got in a little more work, and then this year he obviously blew up with Joey Burrow under center. Very versatile player, and I'm watching him, Fabs, he kind of reminded me of Brian Westbrook.
Okay,
I'm taking it back.
Westbrook, I think, was about 5'9", 5'10". Right. He wasn't a big dude out of Villanova.
Yeah, he was not a big guy. Kind of similar types of player.
But Westbrook did develop into a three-down back.
He did.
Yeah.
Similar player in the passing game, and Westbrook was obviously fantastic through contact.
Mm-hmm. Moving on, let's talk about some wide receivers in this class. It's ridiculous. Henry Ruggs III out of Alabama. My God, these wide receivers they got. I mean, you know, you got two studs coming out this year. You've had Amari Cooper. You've had Julio. You had Calvin Ridley. Boy, I tell you, they say that Clemson is wide receiver U. We're going to talk about T. Higgins in a little bit. But Ruggs last year, 12 games, 40 catches, averaged nearly 19 yards per catch, had 7 touchdowns, 86 catches over his last 2 seasons there with the Crimson Tide. This guy is fast.
Yeah.
He's wicked fast. In fact, a lot of people compare him to Tyreek Hill. Right? He's 6 feet, he's 190, but he's like a matchup nightmare.
Yeah.
So Ruggs, I mean, it's hard to predict that anybody's going to be as good as Tyreek Hill, because this guy is, you want to talk about a nightmare. This guy is ridiculous. But Ruggs, that speed, that explosiveness off the line of scrimmage, dude, he could be a player, man.
Yeah. Henry Ruggs' stats aren't going to blow you away.
Right, exactly.
Never caught more than 50 balls, never had more than 800 yards receiving, and that's likely because...
Look at the talent around him.
Exactly. I mean, he had to fight with Jerry Jeudy for targets, who's, arguably the number one receiver in this class. I watched quite a bit of Henry Ruggs already, and he has some of the freakiest tape I've seen coming out of college in recent memory. I mean, his acceleration is just effortless. I mean, he can get to 0 to 60 in just a split second. The Crimson Tide, Alabama, used him out of the slot. They moved him all around the field. It's not like Ruggs was just sitting in one spot. They used him as a mismatch nightmare because he's so fast. And I mean, this is what we've been seeing in the NFL. This is what the NFL has been trending towards, is these fast, speedy receivers who can get open against any coverage. And Henry Ruggs, he's going to be a mismatch nightmare. And I think people will be pretty surprised about how early he goes, because the NFL teams are addicted to speed.
Oh, dude, he's a first.
Ruggs might run a sub-4.3. He might run a sub-4.3.
I mean, how about you give that added weapon to Drew Lock in Denver. I mean, with Cortland Sutton and
there are so many places Ruggs' speed can fit. I had a tweet a couple weeks ago that I want to see him with the Chiefs just to see Tyreek.
Oh no, they got just enough. They got enough.
Just to see Tyreek, Mecole, and Ruggs all.
They got enough.
In line of scrimmage.
Yeah, so he's going to be a fun player to watch at the next level. Moving on, Justin Jefferson there. Boy, we're talking a lot of Alabama, LSU. I mean, geez,
it's loaded.
Loaded.
It's loaded. The SEC is loaded.
111 catches, over 1,500 yards, averaged nearly 14 yards a catch, had 18 touchdowns. He's tall, 6'3", kind of a slender guy at 192. And you're going to remember him from that game against Oklahoma, where he had 14 catches, 227 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Touchdowns at 19, 35, 42, and 30 yards. He crushed the Sooners. Killed him. He can play on the outside. He can play the slot. He's a really good route runner. He's athletic. Daniel Jeremiah, quote, Jefferson is a polished receiver and should make an immediate impact at the next level. Another first-round pick.
Yeah, I watched a ton of LSU this year. I haven't studied Jefferson like I studied Ruggs, because I didn't get to watch a lot of Bama football this year randomly, but I did get to see a lot of LSU ball. And yeah, Justin Jefferson was clearly Joe Burrow's number one target.
Yep.
Finished this past year second in the college football in receptions and receiving touchdowns, was third in receiving yards. Obviously, helps the Tigers played 15 games. But man,
yep,
like when the Tigers were making their run, Justin Jefferson was the clear guy every single week for
mm-hmm.
them. This receiver class, Fabs, is just absolutely
awesome.
Bananas.
Yep.
Justin Jefferson to close out his season against Georgia, Oklahoma, and Clemson. 3 got-to-have-it games against 3 huge opponents, all top-5 programs. 7 for 115 and 1 against Georgia. Went nuts against Oklahoma. Obviously had the huge game. 14
yep.
catches, 227 yards. And then against Clemson, the national title game, just went for a casual 9 for 106.
Yeah.
Just monster season. Great end of his season. And I think Justin Jefferson will most likely, he'll go in that range where back half of the first round,
early, that's where I'm
early
thinking.
Second round. We're going to see a lot of receivers off the board in between picks 20 to maybe 60 overall. I think we'll see at least 8 receivers in that.
I think
range.
The Patriots could look at him too, in that first round. I mean, if they're not going to be active in free agency and maybe get an AJ Green, that could be a kid that they take a look at. Another one, another kid out of Clemson. You've had Nuke, you've had Sammy Watkins, Mike
T.
Williams.
Higgins is next, man.
Hunter Renfrow, and now you've got T. Higgins. This past season, 15 games, had over 1,100 yards, almost 20 yards per catch, 13 touchdowns. He had 25 touchdown catches in 30 games there at Clemson. He's tall. He's slender, a little bit like Justin Jeffrey at 6'4", 215. He's fast. He's a guy that is extremely effective on slants, on posts, and go routes. He's better on the inside. On the outside. And this is a – I don't know if he's going to be a first-round pick. He might. He might very well be a first-round pick. We'll see what happens. But – you've got that Clemson wide receiver pedigree going on, and this dude is a playmaker.
No doubt. T. Higgins this past year finished in terms of PFF's yards per route run in college football. He's third among all FBS receivers. Obviously was, you know, it really helps to have Trevor Lawrence, future number one overall pick, Trevor Lawrence throwing the ball. But T. Higgins is just, he was a total freak. Every single time he was on the field, he was a difference maker for that offense. And it's just fabs. The top five receivers in this class are just unbelievable. Yep. And Higgins rounds out what is an extraordinary class. And again, I wouldn't be surprised to see Higgins go as high as like 15 or 20 overall. I think, you know, teams are going to be in the market for receivers in this loaded class, and they're going to try and get their guys that are high on their board.
Yep. You know what's going to be interesting to me? I did NFL Now yesterday, and I said that I'd like to see Jerry Jeudy end up going to the Cardinals. Larry Fitzgerald is, I guess we would expect this is his last season, right? You know, they have Christian Kirk, they have Andy Isabella, you know, they have Akeem Butler there as well, so they've got some good young wide receivers. But Cliff Kingsbury, if I could speak English, said Kyler Murray has made no secret that he wants CeeDee Lamb, his former teammate there at OU. Imagine, like, if the Cardinals get one of those two guys, that offense, I mean,
the Cardinals,
it's going to be so fantasy friendly.
Right.
It's going to be ridiculous.
The Cardinals are obviously going to be heavily in the market for receivers. And
yeah.
I hope if they get one of these top five guys, especially if it's Lamb or Higgins or Ruggs, I mean, oh my God, everybody's going to be all in.
Or Jeudy, any of them. And they've been tied to some of these guys.
Yeah.
So
I would not be surprised to see the Cardinals take a similar approach that they took last year. I'm leaving the light on for Andy Isabella. But they took like four receivers last year, and I would not be surprised to see the Cardinals take like at least two or three.
I feel like as much as we like to talk about Isabella, I kind of feel like they're going to get some guys that are going to overshadow.
I'm leaving the light on for him, Fabs. Yeah. I'm staying a truther.
Yep.
They got Hakeem Butler, too, who didn't play last year.
Yeah, he didn't. Remember, I'm not saying I was, but a lot of people in the industry were all over him, and then he ended up falling to the fourth round and didn't really do much of any, right? Fourth round pick, I believe it was?
Yeah, he fell to a third day pick. He was the fifth round.
Fifth round, okay. Eddie, so I'm just looking on Twitter here, and there's a tweet from you saying that the Giants are already giving you anxiety. What happened? What's wrong?
There's a few reports out there that basically just based off the comments from Gettleman and the lack of, I guess, comments by Judge, that they would – in theory, be open to trading Daniel Jones and taking another quarterback at four.
What?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen, but...
Yeah, that's there's no way they're going to do that.
No, I don't think so, but it ties into the fact that they said that Shermer and Mike Shula, the former head coach and offensive coordinator, were the ones that are really pushing to draft Jones, and this is a new regime now, and... yeah, I don't see the bright side of that, especially with how at moments how spectacular Daniel Jones did look last year, and now you have some pieces around him. You have a lot of cap space, high draft pick again, better chemistry with your receivers like Darius Slade. I know he's already working out with. So it makes zero sense. But this is what David Gettleman does. He says a lot of stuff that rubs people the wrong way. So he's continuing with that in 2020.
I guess so, right?
Dave Gettleman is very good at putting his foot in his mouth.
You know what I've realized. The end result, generally speaking, with him has been okay. If you look at the trades, the OBJ trade, they kind of made out in that one. The Zeitler for Olivier Vernon, who's going to get cut by the Browns, made out in that one. Both drafts have been, you know, very good. A lot of good young pieces. Mm-hmm. It's just the path getting there makes no
bizarre.
Sense. Extending OBJ, you know, keeping Eli and giving him the contract bonus and starting him for two games and just a lot of other stuff, trading for Leonard Williams, and now you might lose two picks. Like, he has some stuff where total head scratcher, but the end result, you know, now they have a lot of cap space. They have a good young core. It's like, okay, he does some things right, but man, oh man, it's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Do the Redskins, do you think they're sort of knocking around the idea of taking Tua at two?
I you know, after taking Haskins,
I know, but the Cardinals, the Cardinals with Rosen, and then they're like, we're gonna go with Kyler. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time something like that happened. I mean, Chase Young is bananas, like the best defender in this class by a mile. He's so freaking good. But quarterbacks win championships, right? I mean, like that's that's why you're gonna see three quarterbacks go in the top six likely in this draft. I mean, would they do that? Would they do that?
I mean, Haskins started 9 games this past year, and all of them were with Bill Callahan as the head coach.
Who's going to run it?
Yeah, it's not exactly like Haskins had a lot of great tutelage in his rookie year, and it's also not like Haskins had great protection because his best offensive lineman, Trent Williams, sat out the entire year. And it's also not like, outside of Terry McLaurin, they had a lot of great receiver help. I would like to see Haskins get a full year as the starter, but again, I mean, it's a quarterback-driven league, and they have a whole new coaching staff who might come in with some different ideas, and if they don't feel like Haskins is their guy, then I would not be surprised to see them take Tua. I'll say that much.
Yeah, right. I mean, right now the consensus is that Tua is going to the Dolphins at number 5, but we'll see what happens.
It seems like the Giants and the Skins, if they are looking at...
The Giants don't trade back, though.
They don't trade back. This is the one they could. I mean, he's had 7 drafts. I mean, you can make the argument in some of those. He's hidden a lot of players in those 7 drafts. You know, McCaffrey, Saquon, Jones for the time being. But, you know, this is a draft where they could trade back if they don't want the quarterbacks. I get what the Giants and the Skins would do in theory as you work out these guys. And be like, oh, you know, the Cardinals just did it. We're open to that. Right. You know, create a smoke screen, make a team move up and give you an extra pick or two. But I think the 31 other teams are pretty, you know, aware that these franchises would not take another quarterback because the promise the other ones have shown. So I don't know how useful that'll be, what the Giants, their game plan is, but just trade back.
So just one last fun topic here is the Buccaneers have been promoting, you know, like crazy on social media over the last couple of days that they're going to be releasing new uniforms.
Yes. Finally.
Now I would argue that the current Buccaneers uniforms are the worst pieces of trash that any team has worn in the National Football League's history. Awful. The Buffalo Bills crap jerseys, like during the Bledsoe era, those were trash also. But these are awful. Awful.
They're bad, but I wouldn't say they're
really they're ugly.
Yeah.
And they got the alarm clock numbers on. They're awful. To the Buccaneers, is there any chance they go back to the creamsicles?
I hope so. I hope they bring it back as just an alternate. Like,
I think that's what they're going
to
do.
They should.
That video, the first jersey they showed the
was the old creamsicle. Yes,
and then it ended with them stitching what looked to be a red jersey. I think what's going to happen is they're going to go closer to the Derek Brooke, the when they won the Super Bowl, those kind of red with the pewter, more simplified, maybe have more orange in them. Maybe a logo change, kind of reverting back to the older one. And I think what Graham said, I think they're going to have the creamsicle as the alternate, the Thursday night jersey or something like that.
Yeah, bring the creamsicle back as the alternate. The Bucks have such a good color scheme, too. Like, they should have great uniforms, and it's just not – I don't think they've figured it out yet. Hopefully they figure it out in this iteration.
What was the name of the Buccaneer on the helmet there back in the day? I don't remember. Okay, but dude, I love anything 80s. I like, so I mean, you know, I'd rather have the Giants with the Giants on their helmet.
Oh, I love those helmets.
than what they have now. And the Jets, same thing. Like, I actually like the Jets, you know, new color. It looks really good.
Yeah.
But I'd rather see the Jets on there. The Broncos should have never went away. And I get it. After they changed, they won the Super Bowl a couple of times. Whatever. They should stay. They go back to the D. That was the best. And the Buccaneers. Whatever.
When the Jets announced their new uniforms last year, I was kind of like, they're all right. And then I saw them on
the field. I like the color.
I saw them on the field.
I like the color, man.
They're pretty sweet.
I mean, they did one thing right.
They're pretty sweet.
It's a fun exercise to go through each team and think about when their best uniform was, and more likely than not.
Wait, Damashek hasn't done that already? I mean, come on.
2 weeks
and by the way, I got a bone to pick with Dave. Why did he not call me to come in for that? We always talk about uniforms on social media everywhere, and I see that you guys did a show on uniforms, and I didn't get a call.
When the teams fully release them, we'll have you on to review. But more likely than not, the team's original jersey or their earlier stages of their uniform is usually their best. It's never the new updated version. It's usually the original. I can think of only a handful. The 49ers actually, with the 90s jersey, the Steve Young ones with the black shadow.
Oh, I hated those.
No, those are the best.
Those were awful.
Those are sweet.
Those were awful.
Those
weren't.
Those are the ones.
The best ones were the ones when Montana and Rice were winning Super Bowls back in the day, and now they're wearing those now, but they have like the black sort of over the logo on the helmet.
The black shadow and the black stripe.
No, I didn't like those.
I'm with you on that.
I wasn't into those. Those are
one of the rare improvements.
I'm also excited to see the Falcons' new unis, too. They're bringing out some new uniforms here.
Atlanta's best uniforms were back in the Steve Bartkowski, the William Andrews. Yes. The black ones from back in the day were nice, too.
Yeah.
But the red ones with the red uniforms, those were awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Get Damashek on the phone. When you guys do that show, I want in.
Yeah, done deal.
I want in.
Yeah.
The Falcons should definitely bring back the red helmets.
Yes.
Those are.
No doubt about it. And you know what? I said this last year because, you know, we did the whole, you know, 100, you know, anniversary. They should, and the NFL should still do this. I don't know who I talked to. I saw Roger Goodell last year at a fantasy football event, and I should have said something to him. He probably would get out of here, Fabiano. But they should have every week, they should pick weeks where they have either a division or maybe it's the whole conference or whatever the case may be. In week six, they have like jerseys from the 60s. In week seven, they have jerseys from the 70s. In week eight, they have jerseys from the 80s. And you can't tell me that's not going to include that. That's not going to increase revenue. Are you kidding me? If you put all those jerseys out on the
circulation
up, dude, friggin' A, man, that would be awesome.
It's kind of like how the NBA kind of went through this. And they still do it. I mean, a lot of NBA teams have different iterations of their jerseys, but that's, you know, simply because they play way more games. But the NBA has you can get any iteration of NBA jersey now.
The right. Cowboys' best jerseys were the jerseys from the late 70s. The royal blue.
Yes.
They never wear those anymore, ever, and it's stupid. Like the navy blues, I hate them. I don't like them.
They're right.
They're not as good.
The problem with the Cowboys is those weird silver grayish pants. Like you got the blue silver.
You got to go light blue.
Yeah.
The light blue on the whites. Like back in Danny White's time, Tony, those were sweet.
If the Rams are one of the four teams getting new uniforms, would you be okay with them going full gold?
No, I don't want that.
It depends on.
How
loud is the gold? Because I mean, I could see.
Wait, gold? Sweet. I thought they were.
Remember the Chiefs Rams game?
No, they went all yellow. Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If they went all yellow like that, would
no
primary color. You don't want.
No, that. I want the 70s and 80s Rams jerseys. The throwbacks that they wore, the one they wore in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the blue.
Right?
The blue, yeah.
And then the other ones were the white ones where they had like the yellow sleeves and I think it was like a blue horn or. Yes, that's what I want. I want that. I can talk about this all day. Anybody who's trying to listen about fantasy football probably has already long shut the podcast off, but whatever. Tell Dave, I'm going to text him. I want in here. I want to talk about this.
Yeah, when they release them, we'll do
a
show.
We will have a whole lot of fun with that. And the Buccaneers, they're not going to do it. They're probably not going creamsicles, but boy, wouldn't that be just, as Dave Damashek says, glorious. It would be tremendous. Anyways, we hope that you thought this edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast was glorious. Next week is March, right? So Marcus will be back. Is that right?
Allegedly.
So, Marcus being like, yeah, screw you guys, man. You guys just keep going.
Allegedly.
So Marcus should be back next week.
Yes.
So we'll be looking forward to that. Hopefully he's over the fact that the Niners got beat in the Super Bowl. We'll see. I mean, he's tough. I mean, the Warriors are awful too. So, but I mean, he's a Dodgers fan, so he's got Mookie Betts now. He's good to go. And David Price. So we will see you next week. The whole band will be back together, I assume. And we will talk about what we've seen from the combine, the results, all the drills, who was great, who was terrible. Are Joe Burrow's hands too small? Although who gives a rat's butt about that? He's fine. He had 60 touchdowns with small hands and a 76% completion percentage. I think he'll be fine. So make sure you tune in next week as we go through the combine stuff. And I'm sure we will also get a little more free agency in that because after the combine is over, the frenzy will begin. See you then.